Vasai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Across every state of India, across 125 countries, across political, religious, racial, geographic and linguistic divide, across social and cultural barriers, what compels millions to step forward and reach out to complete strangers in need? Since 1940, when the 14-year-old Satya declared his divine mission, a silent revolution has emerged from a heart that preaches only one language, that of unconditional love. Through his massive service projects, Bhagwan Baba has redefined spirituality as social activism, responsible charity and conscientious citizenship. Be it a service project in remote Andhra Pradesh or at a slum in Zimbabwe, volunteers from all backgrounds are transforming our world by serving in the name of Sai.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram and welcome to a new episode of our radio series, Serving in the Name of Sai. In this series, we bring you accounts of Swami's love and our love for Swami translating into service to humanity. Today's episode is part 5 of a 5-part conversation with Mr. Hari Shankar, an alumnus of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who is currently working for the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust at Prashant England. In conversation with him is Radio Sai's Raghu, and this was first featured as part of Thursday Live during February 2015.
Dear listeners, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. And this is a segment, Service, Love in Action. I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and as you all know from the past couple of weeks, Brother Hari Shankar has joined me to co-host this show. Sai Ram, brother.
Sai Ram, Raghu.
So last week, if you are there with us, dear listeners, we are discussing on the topic service to society, in fact, from the last couple of weeks. And last week we were discussing on what Swami has told of the attitude that we should have when we serve others. Right, brother?
Yes, brother. So that ties in from the fact that Swami is not looking at seva as a mechanical activity, but as a spiritual activity. So
yeah.
That how do we maintain our being such that we are of service to people?
So last week, the main requisite for seva that we were discussing was that we should feel the pain of others, right? Like as Swami has said, this whole world is like one body.
Yes.
Just like when we are going in a forest, if a thorn pricks our leg,
yes,
the hand immediately reacts. If the pain is too much, then the eyes also immediately react by the tears. So the entire world is like one body. If there is any suffering at any part of the world, we should feel the pain and immediately react.
Yes, yes. The feeling of oneness that we adopt with people around us. You know?
So then we discussed about the Nishkama Seva aspect, right? The selfless service.
Uh-huh. So that was, Swami actually mentioned this in a discourse to the, Seva conference. He said that this is one of the important requisites for a Sevak, that when he does, he should not expect any benefit in return to him.
Yeah.
So he says that is when it becomes a real spiritual activity. You know, we visited this concept of giving. So we spoke about Narayan Seva, where that is one of the main activities that many Sai centers undertake. And we looked at it from the context of the Shikshavali.
Yeah, correct.
The Taittiriya Upanishad, which has a set of verses which are devoted to this. Like, what is the attitude we should adopt when we give? And we saw that how in the Japanese tradition, they follow almost, you know, this thing in practice. That is, when they give a gift, the kind of attitude they adopt when they give a gift is like, they don't come down to you with an arrogance, like, here, take my gift.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, Are you sure you will be able to use this? I hope this gift is good for you. You know, that kind of modesty.
With full respect and modesty. Yeah.
In Shikshavali, they say, bhiya dayan, give it fear. So at first, without knowing this kind of practice, it doesn't become clear, you know, what do you mean by giving with fear? Where does fear come into giving? But that is the fear, so-called, that will the person accept it? You don't take it for granted that the person will accept your gift. So that is the kind of attitude that is shown. Very important attitude, not attitude, but a feeling of love. That is where you should be coming from when you conduct seva. And we looked at, you know, how deep our concept of love must be. Like right now it is a very shallow concept, very superficial concept for us. But we looked at one incident of how Swami, he chided students, like when they sent old clothes as relief material to the victims of the Bhuj earthquake. Whereas he is their mother, right? He is the mother of the universe. And in that suffering also, he could see that these are real people, like his children, who are just victims of a tragedy overnight. And he made sure that they were returned to their dignity. Whereas we would send our old, used clothes. Mm. That doesn't, it shows how little we respect those people as we do our so-called service activity. So that is one of the things that we looked at in this particular episode. In my experience, with limited experience with the Satya Seva organizations, I have been inspired by some of these examples of people who are doing seva with that much dedication, and at the same time that attitude of purity. They're so connected to Swami, and when you're connected to Swami and you do the work, it comes out so pure. So that two examples we looked at the last time, that when you're connected to Swami, very naturally your ego doesn't come into play.
Yeah.
And this feeling of love, it comes so automatically, because Swami has said that when you serve, you must see God in that person whom you're serving.
That's why he has named it as Narayan Seva.
Yeah, so we gave that example, and we took up a very specific example of how Narayan Seva is being done in a location in Hyderabad called Begumpet. In my eyes, that is the ideal of how Narayan Seva is to be conducted.
It was about the Dr. Narasimhan, right?
The one that is used to be headed by Dr. Narasimhan when he was a member of that center. It continues to this day. They followed that tradition. So, you know, taking on from there, as I was mentioning some time ago, that the feeling of ego, like when you actually conduct seva, that is one of the things that you're of course looking to efface your ego as a spiritual aspirant, but it also comes in the way of your being of service to another person. Because fundamentally, you're not trying to complete any of your desires, you know, not satisfying any of those desires, any needs that you have. We are looking at serving someone else, like looking at what they need, what completes them. So that is what you are looking at. So fundamentally, humility is a requisite when we are performing seva. And I'll tell you, Raghu, this, I learned this lesson a very hard way.
Hmm.
I was barely 17 or 18 when I got my first chance to be a sevak over here in Prashanti Nilayam. I'd struggled very hard for that opportunity, and you know, purely by Swami's grace, it came my way. And you know, when I came here, I realized that one of the most favored, one of the most wanted positions in the various places where you could do seva was being security right in front of Swami's residence, guarding Swami's residence. And one of the reasons was that one thing is you would get a lot of chance of interaction with Swami. Correct. That is like so alluring. No?
Mm.
And Swami would sometimes, he would send prasadam, or after his lunch or tiffin, some items he would send to the sevadal who were waiting outside. And that was a much coveted opportunity in all the different places where you can do seva. And when I came here, they said, oh, like you are such a qualified, you are such an engineer and all those aspects. They said you are such a good personality. I am pretty sure that you will be selected for this chance. And as I kept hearing it from 2 or 3 different people, it really started building up inside that yes, I am that most eligible person for this duty. No one is, you know, is as good as I am and most suited for this.
Mm.
And so that started pumping up. And soon that it became time that we had to get interviewed by the secretary of the ashram, Mr. Chakravarti at that time. Mm. He called us to the office. And I remember he just took one look at my bio, which said that I am an engineer. He said, oh, he's an engineer. He must be good with computers. Let's send him to Shanti Bhavan.
Mm.
And
Shanti Bhavan
is the where the VIPs,
yeah.
Where the VIPs are hosted. And I was assigned that duty. And I was so shattered. You will not believe, Raghu, when I come out, the group leader is trying to pacify me, saying that, oh, you got Shanti Bhavan, is it? Then you will get very good food to eat. And that was the last thing I wanted. And I was so shattered, you will not believe. I was dejected for the next 4 or 5 hours. I wouldn't speak to anybody and I was almost on the verge of tears. And the entire time, the samiti to which I belonged, that samiti convener, one Mr. Singh, he was watching this entire drama unfold. Like, he has known me from many years, so he knew pretty well what my faults were, what my strengths were.
Mm.
And then he called me, I remember in the evening he called me. He said, Hari, you know, I've been watching what has been happening. And to me it occurs that maybe Swami is trying to teach you some lesson in this.
Mm.
I don't know what that lesson is, but I think you should look at what is Swami trying to teach you through this incident. And I reflected, I realized that here I have come to do seva and I have come so full of myself. And you must empty yourself, you know, when you come to Bhagwan, you should empty yourself. And if you look at Swami, he gives the example, he says, why is it that you, when you look at depictions of Lord Krishna, you see that there is a, he is holding a flute.
Mm.
What is the significance of Lord Krishna holding that flute? And Swami explains, see, you should look at how a flute is made. You take a bamboo shoot, any, you know, like item, it may come in various shapes and sizes, just as we are. And it may be solid, full, just, you know, when we come to Swami, we are so full of ourselves, our personality, our likes, our dislikes. We come with that. And then, what does God do with us? Or what is it, how do you make a flute? So you take a chisel and then you start emptying out the insides.
Yeah, correct.
That is the first part of the spiritual process that happens. And that is a little painful.
Make it fully hollow.
Yeah.
Clear the obstructions, right?
You clear all the obstructions inside. And then you take a drill and you make holes in that, So that too is a very painful process that you have to undergo. But at the end of the process, you become an instrument which God so much loves to, He breathes through that. He breathes through you. It's now His will that happens through you. So Swami says that is the significance of Lord Krishna holding a flute to His lips. Because it is now His most dearest instrument, closest to Him. And it is His word now that gets expressed, His breath that gets expressed through that flute. So that is the process. So, I realize that I have come with that much ego. And saying that I am a sevak. Totally incompatible and inconsistent. Right? Total contradiction. And as I realized this, I started really crying and repenting, saying that, Swami, I didn't know what I was doing, but I got so carried away by the things that people were saying around me. And it can't be a coincidence, Raghu, but soon after I repented, maybe 10-15 minutes later, the group leader comes, he's walking to me and I got a big smile on his face. And he says, Hari, you have been now chosen for that duty in front of Swami's residence.
Wow.
I was like, how can this happen?
Mm.
I asked him, sir, how did this happen? He said that in the interviewing process, there was an error. We need 12 people because as one shift ends, you need 6 people in one shift. So they had not chosen 12 people. By mistake, they had chosen only 6 in that day's interview. So when it came to the notice of the authorities, they said that they told the group leader, you choose whomever you want. So they added my name.
Mm.
That's how I squeaked in, in the end. Grace marks, as Swami says, I passed completely by grace.
Nice.
So, but my lesson was learned, it was a hard-earned lesson, you know, really my heart has wrung that day.
Mm.
Because this is one opportunity that I get and it at that moment I felt that Swami had rejected me, that I had not made the cut because of the sense of ego that I had.
In fact, annihilation of ego is one of the main benefits of serving, right?
Yes, it does. We've been talking about that, our obsession with the self. It cures, seva is a tonic for that. It cures our obsession with our own needs. Because one thing is curing, going after our own needs, trying to satisfy them, one problem is it never gets satisfied. Like you never feel happy at that. And the sense of frustration that comes with that. It's a bottom as well. So this is one of the reasons like we undertake seva. And Swami really that is a lesson Raghu, that's very, very difficult to forget. And as when it rises up, I remember that.
Correct. Yeah. In fact, we are talking about flute being an instrument of Lord.
Yeah.
Just when I was listening to that, I was triggered off an incident from the epic Ramayana, which I want to share. This happened after Rama's coronation in Ayodhya. After Rama defeated Ravana and he is back to Ayodhya and he has been coronated. His coronation, he has become the king of Ayodhya. And at that time, Sita and other brothers were just distributing Rama's everyday activities. Like what all service has to be rendered to Sri Rama. They were making a list of activities.
Duties.
So at that time they thought, okay, Hanuman anyhow has done many service to Lord. So let him be excluded. Let us share the duties among ourselves. So that's what they were thinking and they made a big list. And they assigned the duties, assigned the assignments, names of people who are going to do their duty. They gave it to Lord Rama. So Lord, this is the duties and we want to exclude Hanuman because he has got many opportunities to serve you when you are in exile for 14 years. So let us now, we want to serve you, so we have done this duty. Then Rama goes through the duty and he tells Hanuman, see Hanuman, they have excluded you because you have already got many opportunities, it seems. So Rama just smiles and tells Hanuman. Then Hanuman asks for the list and he sees the list of duties. And he says, oh Lord, they have missed one duty which I would like to do. Then Rama said, okay, you tell what is that. Then Hanuman says, see Lord, you are the king of the universe. Now, if you start yawning, you should not snap your finger. That somebody else has to do it. Let me do it. And that's what Hanuman says. And then other brothers also think, oh, this is some insignificant act. Okay, Hanuman, you can take it. Take it up. You can snap when Lord Rama yawns. But they didn't know that for snapping one's finger, he has to be in Lord's company always. So he got the most precious chance to become an instrument in Lord's. That is, you don't know when Lord will yawn, right? So he has to be always in the company.
All the time.
Always in the company of Lord.
Yeah. That's a great lesson that ultimately whatever seva you do, that is finally oriented to your reaching God. That reaching divinity. So that spiritual goal is what you should put in front. It's not the project that you undertake. That is not the end in itself. And if that should also advise the means that you undertake. That you, whenever you do this kind of seva activity, we should be very rigorous in that. It should be full of love. It should actually benefit that person. We cannot afford to take chances saying that just for the sake of showing somebody that we do work, we do something and then we go away. The seva should be as complete as possible. Make sure it benefits that person, does no harm. You know, all these things, it kind of informs that the activity we do should be pleasing to God.
Correct.
Finally.
In fact, this takes us to the next point where we ended last week. That is, social service should neither be social service nor
slow
service.
So that Swami had such an entertaining way of putting this. I remember in discourses, Swami himself would smile when he was saying this. And he would say, you know, that these two, like he would pun on that word, social service is the basic. We are looking to do social service. And Swami would say, in the guise of social service, sometimes you all do social service. Show. He would emphasize in the word show. And which is something that we are all, you know, very familiar with. There are companies that want to do, say, corporate social responsibility, right? So they undertake some projects in the name of that. But they also, they try to get as much mileage as they can. It is almost a substitute for advertisement. So it's treated on par with advertisement expenses at times. The expenditure that they incur in this category called corporate social responsibility. And Swami says like that is not how seva is to be done. In fact, if you look at the Bible, there is this statement, Matthew 6:3. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth.
Okay. Oh.
To that extent. So it should be not only do you tell, not reveal it to someone else, you do it so secretly, so
silently. Secretly.
Yes. Mm. Such silent seva, that was the ideal which many religions held. Even in India we have got this concept of Guptdan. So Guptdan means again anonymous, you donate anonymously. So if you look at Indian temples, they got what is called a hundi. It's a box in which you can give your checks or donations, etc. And no one knows that you have donated. Mm. Right? Who is the person who has donated? It goes into a large pool that is then used for either the benefit of the temple or for the benefit of the society that surrounds that temple. So this Guptdan concept, it is very, very prevalent in India and from several centuries. So the ideal has always been that, again, you don't get any benefit, not even name, not even recognition, not even reputation, out of the seva or act of giving that you have undertaken. So that is the ideal that is set. So Swami used to say, social service is what people are undertaking in the name of social service.
Mm.
And then another pun is to say, social service.
Mm.
So he would say, in the Indian tradition it is said, no, Shubhasya Shigram.
Mm.
So a moment a good thought or a noble thought, you entertain such a thought, you must put it into action. Don't let it be, first of all, don't let it just hang around in your mind. Mm. And not convert it into action. And even when you convert it into action, you're trying to benefit somebody, make sure that the activity happens such that they get the benefit as early as possible.
Correct.
Don't let it drag on for as long as you can, because in the context of judiciary, they say, justice delayed is justice denied.
Right. Mm.
Similarly, the help that you have to render, you have to render it at the earliest. A person is hungry, if you can prepare a quick meal that satisfies their hunger, you don't let them wait for a lavish banquet to happen maybe 2-3 hours later.
Yeah, correct.
So there's very practical aspects as well as ideals that have been followed in the Indian scriptures and scriptures around the world from several centuries.
Actually, again here I want to add one episode from Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
It seems after Lord Rama shot his final arrow to Ravana, and Ravana was just about to die.
Mm.
That time Rama told Lakshmana, see Lakshmana, Ravana is a demon, but he is a very highly educated scholar. So Rama says, Lakshmana, you go to Ravana and he is on his deathbed, just ask him, through his experience of scholarship, ask him some wisdom.
Mm.
No, may not be wisdom, just Rama said like that.
Mm.
And Lakshmana went to Ravana and Ravana said, see, if you get a good thought, put it into action immediately.
Mm.
If you get a bad thought, then keep postponing it. It seems that's what Ravana did. Ravana was so scholarly that he could convert the sea water into sweet water. He had that ability.
Right.
And he got the thought, but he kept postponing it.
I see.
Oh. He got a good thought, but he kept postponing it.
Yeah.
But when he got the thought of abducting Sita, he just put it into action immediately. And that's what ruined Ravana.
Yeah.
So he did the other way. So he told Lakshmana, see, if you get a good thought, don't postpone it. Put it into action immediately. But bad thoughts, you keep postponing it. And again, about the aspect of social service, Swami, in one of his discourses, says, it seems there was one man who donated fans to a school, ceiling fan.
Okay.
But he had that ego that children should know who has donated the fans.
Right.
So what he does was, he gets his name printed on the blades of the fan.
Okay.
So he thinks that, whenever children see the fan, they will read my name.
Mm.
So everyone will come to know that I have donated. But he didn't know that when the fan is put on, the blades will start rotating, so his name won't be seen. When he comes to know about this, he makes sure that the fan is not on.
Oh.
So what is the purpose?
Completely counteracting what he has set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, it comes back to this, Raghu, that when we are doing seva for whom, whose sake are we doing?
Yeah.
As you say, it's very important that we should feel the needs, the pain of the others, the suffering of the others.
Correct.
And that feeling of oneness with them, as Swami has said, this ideal is so important. right? And
now, going forward, like it is said, the aim of life is to know who we really are, right?
Right.
So, some may ask, then how is this seva relevant? So again, for this, there is one episode. It seems there was one man from abroad, and he was in a prominent position in Sai organization. He used to do a lot of seva activities, lot of organization activity. And one day Swami asked him, how is your sadhana going on? How is your sadhana going on? Then this man said, Swami, I am fully busy with your activity. I am fully busy with your mission. Then Swami says, I am not a missionary, sir. Swami said to him.
Okay.
Then Swami said, I have not come to build hospitals or to make educational institutions, to distribute blankets or to do Narayan Seva. But I have come here to lead you all to the path of truth.
Right.
If Seva becomes an instrument for you to go in this path of truth and know who you really are, then that is, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can do service.
Yes. And that's, many of us, we take these institutions, the organization, as the end in itself. But we don't keep our eye on that ultimate prize, which is where Swami wanted to lead us to. In fact, Raghu was speaking to Mr. Chakravarti, who is presently the member secretary to the Board of Trustees. And he was telling me this very interesting thing. He said that when we look at Swami, we look at the various hospitals, educational institutions he has set up. Sometimes we are tempted to think of him as a social worker. That he's a, he did so much service to society, and that's why he is so worthy of respect. But if you look at Swami, that wasn't the position that he took. So, like, if he wanted to do that, he could have set up, his mission would have been setting up as many hospitals or as many educational institutions as he could. But Swami said, that is not the mission that I have come with. He said, my mission is not to build more and more hospitals. And so they asked him, Swami, why did you build these hospitals? Of course, service to the poor, yes, he was moved by the plight of people who could not afford medical care. But Swami said one very interesting thing. He said that I wanted to show that it is possible. There are, in fact, very, very rich, well-off people in this country. They have got the money, they have got the resources. I just wanted to show it can be done, but that people are not doing it. That if people get together with the right attitude of caring for their own brothers who are in such a wretched plight, if they can come together, they can set up their own hospital. It is not for me to go around setting up hospitals everywhere. And he said, that is the reason why I do this. I set up the educational institutions. Why? To show people how education is to be given, and also that it can be done. If you read, you know, recently there have been so many articles in the news and about how doctors who are now serving in so many hospitals, they have come forward, of course, you know, covertly, but they say they have come with very horrific stories of how they are forced, instead of catering to the patient, instead of treating the patient, to put him through as many procedures, diagnostics or unnecessary surgeries just for the sake of earning money. And this goes against their own conscience. They may make money, and their hospital might make even more money, but it completely, it is obnoxious, opprobrious to their own nature, which is why they are coming forward and saying that we are not able to take this anymore. See, that is the ideal of, that's why Swami kept saying that especially when you look at something like the profession of a doctor, it is more associated with service. That attitude has to be there. If you don't have that kind of attitude, you can be technically a great doctor. But at the same time, that patient, he does not get any benefit from it. So that is why, you know, this came in the context of Swami saying, no, I am not a missionary. I remember this. That his mission was not to go set up hospitals, go set up more and more, you know, schools or colleges.
They were just role models for others to emulate.
Yes, definitely. You want to show society you can do this.
Yes, correct.
You know, it's a barometer of just about how caring we are for our own brethren. So that's how it is.
In fact, today we spoke so much about doership, the concept of doership. We should give up the doership when we do service, right?
Yes.
On this context, once one student asked Swami, Swami, you say if we do something bad, it comes back. We have to come back and reap the consequence. Then Swami said, yes. And the student asked, Swami, in that case, if we do something good, shouldn't we come back and reap the good consequences?
Benefits of that.
Benefits? Yeah. Then Swami said, yes. Then the student was a little confused. Swami, if we do bad, we have to come back. If we do good, we have to come back. Then what is the way out?
Yeah.
Right? For that, Swami says, see, whenever you do good, give up the doership.
Right.
Don't have that ego. But still we have some little bit of ego that we are doing it. So in that case, think that you are doing it for me.
Mm.
Whenever we do some service, we should think that we are doing it for Swami.
Bhagavat Pritiyartham.
Yeah.
Remember these are the words that Swami would use.
Yes. So in that case, we give up the doership. We are doing it for Swami. So in that case, we are out of the vicious circle.
Vicious circle.
Yeah.
Exactly. That echoes the teaching of the Gita that whatever work you do, whatever karma you do, that should be done as an offering to God.
Hmm.
So in that case, you neither suffer nor enjoy the benefits of the good karma that accrues from your having done that action. And very interestingly, as you were mentioning this, I remembered one incident narrated by a senior official in the Satya Sai organization. He was saying that once he had a very serious accident and he barely escaped with his life, not even a scratch, but his car was totaled. And so he knew that definitely there was Bhagwan's hand in this. And even as he came here to Prashantilalem and he got an interview, Swami said, see, I protected you.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very, very grateful, thankful. He said, Swami, totally out of your grace. Then Swami asked him, do you know how you won this grace? So he says, no, Swami, tell me. So he says, Swami said that whenever you in that official capacity of yours in the Satya Sai Seva organization, you would knowingly or unknowingly, good used to happen through you. Used to whatever your actions would benefit somebody.
Hmm.
And then they would come and they would thank you. Isn't it? He said, yes, Swami. And Swami asked him, so what would you say when people would come and thank you? He recalled that he would tell them that Swami has done this, and so you should offer your gratitude to Bhagwan.
Thank
you. Only the instrument. So thank Swami for the good that has happened. And Swami said, because you kept saying that Swami has done it, and you should thank Swami, to that extent, the merit that you got, it got multiplied.
Mm.
More and more you said that, more and more your merit got multiplied, and it is that which saved you that day.
Oh.
You call that my grace, but this is what saved you on that day.
Nice.
So that was a very, very revealing thing that he spoke to us. If I remember right, it was in a summer course that he, when he addressed the students, he shared this particular incident.
In fact, isn't it really amazing? Like, Swami has called poor feeding as Narayan Seva.
Mm.
That is, we are serving the Narayanas. We are serving serving God Himself.
Yes.
That has taken the service to an entirely new level.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Entirely a different level. And on the other hand, Swami is also saying that when you are serving others, you think that you are doing it for me.
Yep.
And Swami is also given the way how to do the service. Isn't it really amazing?
Comprehensive, totally comprehensive. That the Sadguru guides us in every step. There is nothing that is left out. There is no loose ends anywhere. It's all neatly tied up. So even if you have any doubts, you can always go consult any of the Vahinis that Swami has written, or go through. And many have experiences, Raghu, that supposing they have a doubt which is really gnawing in their mind, and they're looking for Swami's guidance, they pray to Swami, they open a book and there it is.
Mm.
Exactly that advice is needed at that time. You know, for each person, Swami is the guru and interacts very, very personally to each person.
Correct.
So this guidance is always available whenever we need it. But it takes our willingness, our earnestness, and then God responds to that.
In fact, talking about this giving up of doership, I am just tempted to narrate the incident of Karna from Mahabharata.
Yeah.
Karna was known for his work of charity, right?
Yes.
He was known a person to whom if somebody goes with some meat, he won't send them back empty-handed.
Mm.
So it seems Karna was on his deathbed. Arjuna had shot the arrow and Karna was about to die.
Mm.
And at that moment, Krishna, in a disguise of an old man, comes to Karna and he asks Karna, are you Karna? He says, yes. And are you the person who is known as, like if somebody comes, they won't go empty-handed?
Mm.
Then Karna says, yes. So Krishna says, I have come to you for something. Can you give me? Then Karna says, see, now I am on my deathbed. I don't have anything to give. The only thing I have is the merits of all the good deeds that I have done.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Then the Krishna, in disguise of old man, says, oh, in that case I have to go empty-handed. I'll be the first person to go empty-handed. Then Karna says, no, I will give you the good merits of good deeds that I have done. Krishna asks, okay, give. Then Karna comes to know that, oh, this is not an ordinary man. I'm sure he must be Krishna. And then Karna gives him. There's a way in Hindu tradition how to give charity. That is, you have to pour water in your hand and you have to give it to. And there was no water, so Karna, it seems, takes an arrow and with a few drops of blood he does it. So even at that time, Karna gives all the merits of good deeds that he has done.
That last possession that he had, even on his death, but he was able to give even that away. That's a beautiful lesson, Raghu. So well brought out that ultimately that any action, any benefit that accrues from that, totally should be given to God Himself.
So, shall we wind up?
Yes, Raghu. And I think while it may not have been comprehensive, I think we fairly covered many of the aspects of seva. We looked at how, first of all, why Swami prompts us in various ways to undertake this act of seva. And the benefits, by way of personal growth, by way of spiritual growth. And also, very importantly, we looked at the attitude. Finally, we are a sevak of Bhagwan.
Yes.
And we should look at what are Bhagwan's expectations when we become His sevak. In His name we do seva. And how we should conduct ourselves when we become His sevak, when we become His servant. And it's an enormous fortune that Swami is, He has set up this Sati Sai Seva organization. You and I may have very good notions of what we want to do for society. We may have good intentions. And ultimately, because we are unable, it's a very difficult thing to carry people around you in some notion that you have invented. Like say the Prime Minister says we want a clean India. And you can see how difficult it is for him to make everybody get into that. And if you and I have a notion like that, imagine how much more difficult it is to enroll society around us into doing that along with us.
So Sai organization becomes a good platform.
It's a very good vehicle. The moment you have that intention, you get in the area, you want to serve society and you're already the framework is already set for you.
Correct.
You are there and there is structure, there are people to mentor you, there are projects in which you can get into and learn. And ultimately, if you have a good idea, you can always sound out the members of the Sai Center. And as Swami said in this land, if you have a noble intention, don't even worry about the resources. It will automatically be given to you. He said this is the Punya Bhumi. India is the Punya Bhumi, Bharat. And it is also the Karma Bhumi. And it is bound to happen. Any person with a noble intention can go ahead and start work, resources will just come to him.
Yes.
This is what Swami has said.
A couple of weeks back, I was talking to one of the members of the organization, and he said, see, just like how we sit at home with TV remote and keep changing the channels to choose a program that we like, just like that, Sai organization also has got so many activities that we can choose the service activities that we are interested in.
Yes.
And
yes,
we can do it.
Yes.
So in this segment, service love in action, generally what I do is I speak to Swami's devotees, students, the members of the organization, and come to know about the activities in which they are involved, and also listen to the experience of being involved in service activities and get inspired and also try to inspire the listeners. So I have been doing this for a couple of years now. So now I thought that for a change, we should brush up our basics in service to humanity.
Refresh.
Yeah. What is service? What are the benefits of service? With what attitude we should do service?
Right.
The main thing is giving up the doership. We should always say that we are doing it for Swami. We should always thank Swami for giving us opportunity to. So that's why I called you and we had this discussion for, I think this is the fifth week that we are talking on this, right?
This is the fifth segment.
So thank you very much for coming and joining me.
Yes, Raghu, it was a great experience for me. The number of things that I learned and the depths, to which Swami has, really he has not left anything at a superficial level. And, doing a program with either Bishu or with Prem or now with you, I can go deeper and deeper into what Swami has said, and it's a wonderful opportunity that I get through these programs. So thank you for that.
It's okay. So dear listeners, with that we have come to the end of this segment. You can share your feedback, comments, suggestions, any thoughts to improve this segment. Let's place this segment at Burma's Lotus Feet and sign off for today. Sai Ram.
Thank you. Sai Ram. Thanks.
Sai Ram. You just heard an episode of our radio series, Serving in the Name of Sai, in which we brought to you part 5 of a 5-part conversation with Mr. Hari Shankar, an alumnus of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who is currently working for the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust at Prashanthi Nilayam. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Raghu, and this was first featured live as part of Thursday Live during February 2015. Dear listener, please do send us your feedback and comments. We look forward to your mails. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and sign out.